Okay, so we spoke a little bit last time about the significance of Kabbalah Mitzvahs, and a little bit of a question where this thing came from, what the nature of Kabbalah Mitzvahs is. But the mice, the bottom line is, it's definitely necessary, it's definitely critical, and without it, the entire Gerus is going to be Batul Mevuto. What exactly constitutes Chutz Midavarecha? That we have sort of little different nuances of Shailas. But Rav Moshe has a critical tshuva for us in terms of what's considered to be an acceptable Kabbalah Mitzvah, what's not. So Rav Moshe, following what he spoke about last week, Rav Moshe was willing to invoke the principle of Devarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim when it comes to Kabbalah Mitzvahs, unlike Rav Chaim Elz, who thought that whole principle was not relevant. Rav Moshe was willing to be Machsha that Geirus we spoke about last week, the woman who told us she's Mekabel Mitzvahs, and in her heart of hearts she was planning on doing one thing that was wrong. So Rav Moshe did not invalidate the Geirus because of that. So Rav Moshe raises another question: if you really take this principle to its fullest, to the mamash, to the extreme of Devarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim, so how will it play out as follows? The person comes to convert, the Rav asks him, do you plan on keeping the mitzvah? The person says, yeah, absolutely. Do you plan on keeping Shabbos? Everything is there, Rav. Tasha, absolutely. Tasha, every mamash, you guys swearing up and down, he's going to keep all the mitzvahs, all the chumras, all the hidurim and everything. And there's something inside of us that leads us to believe that he's telling us a big lie. Why do we think he's telling us a big lie? Because we happen to know that he has a Jewish girlfriend, and that's the reason why he's converting. Now, whether we should be converting him or not altogether is another whole other story. I'll talk about that at a later point. But let's say, for whatever reason, we're justified in converting him. And we know that his Jewish girlfriend doesn't keep Shabbos. She's not particularly interested in keeping kosher, and she's not interested in keeping Kasa Mishbacha. So what kind of light sonus is this? He's telling us he's going to keep Shabbos. She's not going to keep Shabbos. So Vadi, he's not going to keep Shabbos. She's going to keep a tray for house. How's he going to? She's not going to go to the mikvah. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So the terrorist is that the guy's lying. Not the first, not the last person to lie to the rabbi. So he's telling us the Baba Maitza because her great-grandmother told her, tell your Goyish boyfriend to say yes to whatever the rabbi says, and shun. So what kind of mitzvah is that? What kind of kabbalah is that? So Rav Moshe says, well, if you follow the principle that I laid down last week, that Devarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim, maybe that's okay. Maybe whatever's inside his heart, we just ignore. We just follow what he says. So Rav Moshe says, that's absurd. Rav Moshe says, I would never say such a thing. No one would ever say such a thing, because that's against the Beferish Adin. Within the sugya of Devarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim, the Gemara in the end of Avivasa qualifies that statement and says, that means if a person does something and we have no reason to believe that he's thinking anything particular. Say the original case, Dvarim Shalei Ben Dvarim, is a Gemara Kedushin Daf Mem Tes. So a fellow sold his house, and we have no idea why a person sells his house. Some people sell the house because they're moving to Eretz Yisrael. Some people sell because they're moving to Pesach. Some people sell the house because they're low on cash. They got a bar. People buy the house for a lot of reasons. Now the guy comes to us a week later and says, the only reason why I sold my house was because I was planning on going to Eretz Yisrael, and I couldn't get a job in Eretz Yisrael like I thought I had lined up for me, and I'm backing out. We're not going to Aliyah this year. So I want my house back. So I might as well jump in the lake. Dvarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim. If you would have said B'shas Maisa, you would have made it tonight. We would have stipulated it. So then, okay, then we could have discussed it. But you didn't say anything, so Dvarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim. We had no way of knowing what you were thinking. So comes the Gemara and says, but what if it's clear from context, we know exactly what you're thinking. You don't have to say it. We can read your mind. Everybody can read your mind. So the Gemara tells, what's the din? If a person doesn't think they have a child, and then they decide, before they die, they give away all their property to somebody, and then it turns out they really did have a child. They didn't even know about it. Their wife was in Medina Sam. They didn't even know that she was pregnant. So the Gemara says, no Meshugana would have ever given away all his property if he would have known that he had a Yoresh. He didn't say that. He didn't say the only reason why I'm giving away my property is because I don't have a Yoresh. He didn't stipulate it. But that's what the Gemara calls Devarim Shebleiv of Leiv Kol Adam. That's what we call Umdun of the Muchach. That it's so obvious from context that that's what the person means, so then it doesn't even have to be stipulated. That's not a Chisar of Devarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim. Devarim Shebleiv Einim Devarim only applies when it's not clear from context. So Rav Moshe says that the Dayanim have to be honest. If it's clear to them from context that this fellow has no intent of fulfilling any of the mitzvahs, because the context of his conversion clearly dictates that way, so that's not called Devarim Shebleiv. That's called Devarim Shebepeh. Even though he's saying to us he's going to keep the mitzvahs, we ignore what he says, and we follow what he thinks. We follow what we know him to be thinking. So Moshe says a lot of gerusim are going to be invalidated, because even though the person is swearing up and down that he's serious, but we know that he's not serious. So Kozman, we know that he's not serious. That's going to invalidate the gerus even to be added. It's very, very tricky now that the Yadim have to be honest. They don't have to be honest for other reasons also. They have to really be honest to themselves and say, is it really clear from the context this person is going to be mekabel mitzvahs? If it's not, then It's not pshat where we convert him b'di'evid. No, it's not even b'di'evid. It's not a geirus altogether, because if it's so obvious from the context that he's not interested in doing the mitzvahs properly, so then that's not going to be a geirus, even b'di'evid. So a couple, and that's really the, kind of the ends of what we spoke about in terms of Kabbalah and mitzvahs, which leads us really into our next topic in terms of who exactly is making the calls of the geirus, who exactly is supervising this geirus. So here the Gemara tells us that it's a Beis Din. We just mentioned before that the Beis Din's role is critical to on many, many different levels of assessing what's going on, but even without assessing what's going on, the Beis Din's role is critical just to be there, because the Gemara says, based on Sukkim, Geretz Arshalash, Mishpat Ksiv Beg. The Torah uses the word Mishpat in a few different contexts by Geirus. So we have a tradition that Geretz Arshalash, that a Ger has to be Misgayer in front of a Beis Din. And if the Beis Din is not an acceptable Beis Din, it's not a kosher Beis Din, so the Geirus is bottled with the Evan. Even if the Mila was good, and even if the Tefila was in a kosher mitzvah, and even if there was Kabbalah mitzvahs, if it wasn't supervised properly by a Beis Din, whatever role Beis Din established, what we're going to talk about, so then that Din Gufa invalidates the Geirus. Geretz Arshalash, Mishpat Ksiv Beis. So just that very statement of Geretz Arshalash, Mishpat Ksiv Beis is a very, very questionable, controversial statement in the Rishonim. Because what do you mean, Geretz Arsh Gimel, Geretz Arshalash, Mishpat Ksiv Beis? That seems to give off the impression that any time you have a Din Torah, any time there's a Din of Mishpat, it requires three. Anyone who learned even the very beginning of Sanhedrin realizes right away that that's not necessarily true. You learned Sanhedrin last year in Yeshiva. So yes, it's true that the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin talks about Dinei Mamnas B'Shloisha, but there's a big machlekes Amoraim, how we got to that number. Where did that magic number three come from? So one opinion the Amoraim is that that's a Din Min HaTorah, that any Din Torah, any Dinei Mamnas case, any monetary law case, requires three Dayanim. How do you know that? Because it says the word Dayanim, Parshas Mishpatim, it uses the word Adah Lehim Yavadah Hashem, it uses the, not the Shem Hashem, but it refers to the word of Dayanim. And it uses that word three times in the Parsha, the whole drushes, the Sanhedrin Tav Gimel, Dalet, the whole complicated drushes. And the Torah speaks about three dayanim. So one Amira says, Dinei Mamnas B'Shloisha, you always require three dayanim. Every case, every sneer of a Din Torah under the sun always requires three dayanim. And the other day, the Gemara, Rabbi Abo disagrees. Rabbi Abo and Shmuel disagree. They say, it's not true. Not every Din Torah necessarily requires, Shmuel, Rabbi Abo. It could be that there are certain Dinei Torah that don't require three. Which do and which don't? So some of the Amoraim say, if you look at the model that the Torah is speaking about, whenever the Torah speaks about requiring Dayanim, Mispra Dayanim, that's always talking about cases what we call in Halacha Gzeilus V'Chavolos. Cases that involve damages, that involve people breaking things, about people breaking people's nets, people stealing things, that whole area of what we call, I guess in the law books, torts, that area of damages and torts, then and only then do you require Gimel Dayanim. But if you have other kinds of Dinei Torah, what Chazal call Hodos V'Havos, I think in the English secular books they call contracts, a thing which involved agreements, I lent you $100, I gave you something to watch, I sold you something, you didn't pay me for, those are different Dinei Torah. So Dinei Torah that involve the Zikin and Gezelis and Genevis, and those kind of Dinei Torah require three. Anything that involves just contracts and agreements and the breach of contracts and those kind of stuff, so those kind of Dinei Torah, those involves, only require one Dayan in the Torah. So that's a big, big machlekes Amoraim. So come to Rishonim in the beginning of Sanhedrin and Maseches Yevamos and Kiddushin, wherever the Gemara talks about Geretz Arsh Shleisha, the Taisus always poses the same question over and over again. They ask the same kasha. How could the Gemara say the Geretz Arsh Shleisha? It's not even true that all mishpat need shloisha. The whole drash is because the Torah calls geirus mishpat. But there are some mishpats that don't require shloisha. According to half the Amoraim, half the Dinei Torah, half the Dinei Mamonos don't really require shloisha. Even Dayan Echad is kosher, Chad Nami kosher. So how could Rabbi Yochanan say in Maseches Yevamos with a straight face, geirus shloisha, you need three kosher dayanim, without three dayanim, the whole geirus is bottom in a Torah. This guy, Benom and Atzbo, is puzzle, even the Evid is not. What do you mean? One dayan should be good enough. If you hold that geirus shloisha, is not an absolute statement. So different Rishonim have different ways of solving that problem. So Tosfos writes in one place that the answer to that kasha is that it's true that some mishpats don't require three, but other mishpats do require three. And the Torah gives the model of geirus. It's not clear which model the Torah is giving us. So we have a rule called the kul l'chum l'chum makshina. Whenever we're not sure whether we should be makish, we should learn a hekesh to the more chumadika version or the more kuldika version. So we always go the chumad. That's the din. Kach nemar halacha. You have to be more machmir. So Tosfos writes, it's based on that din of the chumad makshin, and that's how we ended up with the number three by Yehuda. So different, we share with different answers to that kasha. So there's one day in Rishayim that says that the kasha is better than the teretz. And Mordechai in Maseches Yevamos says that the kasha is such a good kasha that in Ochinami, that when Rabbi Yochanan made the statement, Geretzer Shleisha, that you need three, b'di'evet, b'na Torah, that was because Rabbi Yochanan happens to hold that all dinei mamonos require three. But if you disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, like the Mordechai quote, some Rishonim would say, we don't even accept Rabbi Yochanan. Like I said, Rishonim in the beginning of Maseches Sanhedrin. So according to those Rishonim would say that we pask in that chanami kosher, if there are dinei Torah, there are dinei mamonos, that one dayan suffices. The answer is in Hochinami, that if one dayan suffices, so then one dayan suffices for Geretz also. So even though the Gemara screams and says, Geretzor Shleisha, Geretzor Shleisha, get her, come to the point and say, it's not true, that Geretzor Echad, that we pass in that one dayan is good enough for the purpose of Geretz. So we don't pass in that. Shulchan Aruch, that opinion is not quoted. We pass in like Taisos, like all the other Rishonim will say, that some other Kasha is a good Kasha, but there are good Terutzim for the Kasha as well. So when all the dust settles, we pass in like it says in the Gemara, Geretzor Shleisha Mishvik Sibbeh, so the Dayanim have to have three Dayanim. What standards of Dayanim do we have to have? They have to be Dayanim who are kosher to be Dayanim. If a person is possible to be a Dayan, so then he's Kamad Aleisa, then he doesn't exist. We have to make sure that he meets all the criteria of what's called being kosher Dayan. What are the standards to be kosher to be a Dayan? So the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Nidah that the baseline requirements is that you have to be kosher to be an aid. If a person is not kosher to be an aid, then they're obviously not acceptable to be a Dayan. To be a Dayan is high level. First you're a witness, then later you get the crown of being a judge. But if you couldn't even be an aid in a Beis Din, then obviously you wouldn't be accepted to be a Dayan and to sit in a Beis Din. That's what the Mishnah says, Maseches Nidah. So what are some of the dinim that invalidate aidim? So we know a person can't be a Rasha. If a person is a pi din a Rasha, it's possibly a Dismin HaTor. The Torah says in Pashas Mishpatim, Al Tashas Yadcha Rasha Liyosei Chamas. So by extension, if he can't be an aid, so then obviously, by extension, he can't be a dayan either. So what constitutes a rasha? So the Gemara has a whole sugya in the third paragraph of Sanhedrin. What constitutes a rasha? So basically, when all the dust settles, there are two different multiple categories of rishoyim and halacha. One is somebody who's a ganav. The Torah says, "Al tashes yochim rasha lios el chamas." Chamas is lashon gazela. Kimal aretz chamas b'pneim is synonymous with gazela. So if a person is dishonest, person's a ganav, person cheats. So then he's for sure possible to be an aid. So if a person's a god of a gazlan, if he's possible to be an aid, so obviously Kavachim is possible to be a dayan. That's the first level of psul. Then the Gemara speaks about a second level of psul. Let's say you have a person, he's not a dishonest fellow in terms of Ben Amachavero, but he's not particularly religious. He violates different Yisurim in the Torah. So what Yisurim does he violate? He eats straight, he eats chazer, or he wears shatnez, he does all kinds of lafim in the Torah. So at what point do we say that such a person is considered to be a Rasha? So that's Machlekes Abaye and Rava. So Rava said that it depends what his mindset is. If he's what we call a Mumma L'Teyavon, that he really believes in the whole religion, he really wants to be a good guy, but he has every time he walks by McDonald's, he smells the cheeseburger and he can't control himself. He runs in and he buys a cheeseburger. He has a tremendous taiva to do certain Yisurim. And Rava says such a person is possibly Aedis, because the Torah says, Atash Yisrael HaRosh HaLeseh Chabas. So anytime a person is going to succumb to his Yetzaharas, either he succumbs to his Yetzaharas for money, or he succumbs to his Yetzaharas for pleasure, such a person, we're always nervous about it. How's he ever going to testify truthfully and based in? Someone will hand him a couple of dollars on the side and he'll testify falsely. So the same way that the person can't control himself to eat the tray for food, so he's not going to be able to control himself to be able to pocket a few dollars to falsely testify. So that's what Rava says. Anyone who's what we call a mumma l'teyavon is automatically possibly aedus. But if you have a guy who's a mumma l'haches, it doesn't mean he wants to give the Rebbe Shalom a heartache. It just means that he has no taiva. There are two pieces of food in front of him. One's a kosher piece of meat, one's a trade piece. It's the same price, the same taste, the same price. Everything's the same. And he said, I'm not interested. I'm going to pick the tray for peace. That's called the mumma l'haches. They couldn't care less one way or the other. So Rava says, such a person is kosher l'aedus. Why is he kosher l'aedus? Because he's not dishonest. He lives up to his morals. He doesn't have the right set of morals. We would like to have a more religious set of morals, but he lives up to his morals. So he lives up to his standards, whatever his warped standards are. If a guy, his standards are to eat kosher, and he doesn't eat kosher, so that shows that he sacrifices the standards of what he considers to be right. So we're nervous about his ability to withstand, to tell the truth. But if a guy who's totally in sync with what he believes in, he does exactly what he believes in. So we assume that he's kosher l'aedus. That's Rav's Chiddush. Rabbi says, no, he's also possibly aedus. The Mumma L'Haches is also possibly aedus. Why is the Mumma L'Haches possibly aedus? So it's not clear why Abaye says that. So one can understand that one of two ways. Either because Abaye says that we're also very nervous about the Mumma L'Haches' standards, because his standards of right and wrong are defined by his own judgment. And he doesn't answer to a higher authority. He doesn't believe in the Rebbe Shalom. He believes, but he doesn't act in accordance with the Rebbe Shalom's Torah. So you never know what his standards are going to be. There's no morality, no ethics without halacha, says Abai. It's impossible to say that the person is going to be telling the truth in Beis Din. We have no way of knowing. Kozmani doesn't succumb to the Rabban Shalom's ol ha-mitzvahs. So maybe that's the kudus mechlik, the Bain Rav, a very deep philosophical, morality, ethical question. Can you have ethics without halacha? So Rav seems to say, yeah, you can have honest witnesses without halacha. And Abai says it can't be. You can't testify truthfully. We can't say for certain you're telling the truth unless you observe halacha. Or maybe that's not the pshat. Maybe Abai agrees that ethically, morally, maybe he's telling the truth. But Abai holds as it did. You're a Rasha. I don't care what your ethics are. If the Torah says a Rasha is supposed to be, it's supposed to be, it's finished. So it's not clear exactly why Abai said what he said, but he did say it, and we passed like him. This is one of the Yalka Gams. This is the Mumar Ochel, Yalka Gam. This is the Mumar Ochel Nevelis Lahaches. We passed in as possible. So the bottom line is, anytime you have either a person who's dishonest, or if a person is a balavera, he's by definition possibly aedus. What do you mean a balavera? What avera? A person speaks lashon hara, he's possibly aedus. No, it has to be an avera that he's called the rasha for. What levels of avera are you called the rasha for? So the rabbi writes in the aedus, if you are chayav misas beis din, say mechal shabbos, a guy violates eshezish, he does averas that carry with him an onesh misas beis din, so then he's chayav misa, whether there's asura, the aedim, no sanhedrin, but lamaisi is theoretically chayav misa. The Torah quo, someone who does Chayvim Misas Beis Din in Russia. And similarly, the Rambam writes, if he does Chayvim Malkus, he's straight, he does Malach and Yontif, he wears Shatnez, he shaves with the razor, he does all kinds of Isurim that carry with it a Chayv of Malkus. So the Torah says, Vayam Bin Akosa Russia, who is called a Russia. So a Russia, by definition, is possible. So the bottom line is, anyone who either is a Ghana, he's a Goslin, he's dishonest, he cheats in business, he's possibly Aedis. Or if you have a person who does Chayvim Misas Beis Din is possibly Aedis. Or if you have a person who's Chayvim Malkios, he's also possibly Aedis. If a person, once in a blue moon, does something they didn't even realize they made, he didn't learn every single Mishnah Berurah and Hilchos Beiros, so it turns out that he took out a watermelon seed one time, maybe it was Machal Shah. That's not called possibly Aedis. That means he knows. He basically knows what's going on, and he still does the affair of Aedis, and then he becomes possibly Aedis. You must tell the story in Sanhedrin about that there were people who used to do Malacha and Yom Tov. Why did they do Malacha and Yom Tov? They were firm people. They were the Chevra Kedisha in town. And when somebody would die, they would prepare the kever on Yom Tov Rishon, which you're not allowed to do. Only the goy's mutter. They would take care of tachrich and the kever. They would do mamash malachas deraisa on Yom Tov Rishon. So the rabbanim told them they have to stop, and then they didn't want to stop. So the rabbanim put them in techerim for violating Yom Tov Rishon. So the Gemara says that those people were still kashali in this. Why? Because they were shaggy. They thought they were doing the right thing. Either rabbi put them in techerim, but they had a whole lumbus. They said, no, the rabbi really likes what we're doing, but they have to put us in techerim for public opinion. The rabbi has to make believe that we're doing the wrong thing, but we know in the heart of hearts, we really have the blessings of the rabbi. So the Gemara says, they're still kosher liyedus. Why? Because the fishita of Zafakum Teshita, the fishita awesome, they were still okay. So as long as you have a person who has a half-baked akrum teshita, he thinks what he's doing is pretty much religious, but he once in a while does something off, but he doesn't really understand what he's doing, so he's still technically kosher liyedus. Then you have other people who become posel liyedus, and again, once you're posel liyedus, you become posel adayonis as well, by definition. You have a person who may even observe the mitzvahs. He may even be living a certain lifestyle that's observance of the mitzvahs, but he's mamish not bikaris. He's a koyfe b'toyr. He doesn't believe in their bashram, doesn't believe in the Torah, doesn't believe in the Shemayim. There's also a pakrumta hashkafis. So that is also possibly aedus. Such a person is considered like a mumal chalotar kula. The person has such a fakrumta understanding. So how fakrumta is fakrum? So that's a we pass in halacha. The Rambam sets up for us one of the guidelines. How fakrumta is fakrum? A person could sometimes be off a little bit. He has a little bit of misunderstanding about certain things. Okay, so a lot of people have misunderstandings. So the Rambam in his Akdama to Karechelech and Sanhedrin explains to us that he elaborates upon this Nechus Shuvah. There are certain parts of our Amuna that are not negotiable. We can't negotiate whether the Rosh Hashanah exists or not. We can't say, I'm a good Jew, but I don't believe in the Rosh Hashanah. That's not acceptable. I'm a good Jew, but I don't believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. I'm a good Jew, but I only believe in Torah Shabbat, I don't believe in Torah Shabbat. I'm a good Jew, but I have a different understanding of what Torah Min HaShemayim means, something that no one ever heard of in the last 3,300 years. We've heard it before, the Tztukim had it, the Basusim had it, the Karoim had it. We know that's not part of our Messiah. So a person has a Zaf, a Krumta level of Hashkafa that's reached a point where it's Chutz L'machana in terms of being an acceptable part of understanding of Torah B'Shamayim, or an acceptable understanding of what Torah B'Shamayim is all about, or he has such a different understanding of what Geula of Yom HaMashiach is, a Mesim, that's not part of a regular, normal, normative Torah tradition. So that person is considered to be like a koifer. So a person is a koifer, but Torah, a koifer, the Ribbono Shel Olam, all these kinds of things. So of course he can't be an aid, of course he can't be a dayan, of course anything that he does is going to be off. It doesn't matter whether the person went to the mikvah or not. The dayan is not a kosher dayan, so that's the kibbutz gayer, not in the presence of dayan.
Okay. How does the Russia qualification work, Lemafre?
It doesn't work Lemafre. From the moment on, you become Russia. Let's say a guy is from, he's doing all the mitzvahs, he has a very normal hashkafa zechayim, and then all of a sudden, at the age of 55, he goes off the deep end. So any gayrus that he does from 55 on is no good. The gayrus that he did in the last 30 years, okay?
No, I meant the dayan who's converting him.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Meaning he's a rav, and then it's found out a few years later that he was immersed in God knows what.
So the question is, was he doing those things at the time that he was? Yeah. That's all. Yeah. I mean, he was doing those things in Bishas Maisa. If it's proven that he, this becomes very tricky. If it's mamish proven that he was a Russia all along, means he's indicted now on things that he did 10 years ago. So it turns out he was a thief 10 years ago, and now it's proven you're doing a person that those really things happened 10 years ago. So like, boy, Muslim, he wasn't really kosher to be a dayan. That's a very serious problem. Right?
Nebuchadnezzar.
I don't know. Raman Ravitz, I'm not sure. But stay away from Apikorsis. I don't know. Somebody once told me, they were telling me over a whole, I can't call it Shtibble Torah, they told me Shtibble Narish guy, they were telling me over. And they saw from my face that I didn't like what they were saying. So the person said to me, I know this is bordering on Apikorsis. So I said to them, it's bordering, it's on the wrong side of the border. I don't think they like that comment. But so you have to be careful. We don't play games with these kinds of things. Okay, so some of the other criteria that a person to be a kosher dayan, again, has to be a kosher aid. So the pashas advarim is that women are not accepted to be dayanim, because women are not kshayrus to be aidim. The fact that a woman can't be an aid, that's a fairish mishnah masechta shvuos. So obviously a woman, that's psalm in the Torah, that was never a question. So Tosfos throughout Shas always quotes the same question, the same pismah. Tosfos asks, how could it be that it says in the pasuk, Navi and Shoftim Devora was a shofetes? How could it be if the din is that a woman can't be a dayanet? So Tosfos, in every place that they ask the kash, they give you different terutz. So one place Tosfos says Shitacha wasn't really being shofeta, she wasn't paskining, she was just teaching the rabbis didn't really did it. She was she knew Chosh Bishop better than they did, so she was helping them along. That's Tosfos writes in one place. And Tosfos writes in another place, it was a Rosh Shal, it was a Pinavi, it wasn't a regular dinei Torah, they don't ask any kash, that's what was possible in Shoftim. And in one place Tosfos writes that maybe women attack the kshevers to be dayonim. Maybe. How can it be? The Rishonim asks, how can that Tosfos say that? If a woman is still to be an aid, and the Mishnah says if you can't be an aid, you can't be a dayan, so Taisus tries to fend for why that Mishnah maybe is not a kasher. So tucked away in one place in Kalatar Kula, there's one day in Taisus that has the possibility that maybe a woman could be a dayan. But in Shulchan Aruch, that day is not quoted, not in Chesh Mishpat, not in Yerodeachus Geirus, it's not even on the radar screen in Shulchan Aruch. Nobody said such a thing, so that's obviously Nimr Vagomu, that opinion was not accepted b'chlau in our system. So women are psulos to be aidim and psulos to be dayanim. Hanim are also psulim, under the age of a mitzvah would be possible. Again, krovim apostle, you're not going to have krovim to the ger. It's impossible. The ger is not a person not Jewish yet, but the krovim will be krovim to each other. If you have two dayanim or krovim to each other, so they shouldn't be sitting together on the same case. So when every time you have anyone to sit on case of geirus, you have to make sure they meet all the criteria of being kosher edim, and then you have to be at an additional level, you have to be kosher dayanim. So Tosfos raises also the same question. Any time the sugya comes up, Tosfos says, wait a second, we have a big problem. How can we have any geirus bizman hazeh? Because we don't have real dayanim, because none of the dayanim have smicha. The Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin tells us that in order to be a dayan, on cases of dini nefashos, or perhaps the case of dini momenos also to some degree, Mishachoydish, etc., you have to have smicha. And smicha means Ish v'pishah and Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not enough to be part of the Chagas Smicha. It's not enough to finish your credits and get the okay from Rabbi Bronstein. You got to have a Moshe Rabbeinu. Bronstein is a great person. Moshe Rabbeinu, Ish v'pishah and Moshe Rabbeinu. So that process of smicha has been broken already over 1,500 years ago. The reason why that process was broken is because the Gemara says that process can only be conferred in Eretz Yisrael. And when it reached the time at the end of the Kufa of the Amoraim, that the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael was pretty much decimated. There was very, very little left to it. And whatever little left was left was under the Romans. And it was that time when the Roman Empire accepted Christianity. And that was almost in the end. Whatever was left in Eretz Yisrael was almost nothing. But the thriving Jewish community at that time was in Babel. So there were great Tamid Chacham in Babel, but they didn't have smicha. Abai and Rava, and Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, they didn't have smicha. They didn't have the Ish v'Pishah and Moshe Rabbeinu. that basically died down. That was the same time that the calendar had to be set, because you can't have Kiddush HaChodesh anymore. Kiddush HaChodesh doesn't need the Beis HaMikdash, but it does need the Yom Smuchim, and we don't have that anymore. So without the same period of time, when the days of Abayin Rav, when Hillel HaSheni was living in Eretz Yisrael, when the Smicha was coming to an end, the Sanhedrin was Lagamri coming to an end, and the calendar was coming to an end. So they had to figure out how to set up a calendar with Beri Deiris. That's another sugya for now. And one of the things that never fell by the wayside was Smuchen. So we don't have Smicha anymore. So therefore, we don't have Dinei Fashos we haven't had since the Beis HaMikdash anyway. But we don't have Dinei Knossos anymore. We don't have Dinei Makas anymore. The Kiddush HaChodesh, a lot of these things we can't do anymore. There was a very, very small window of time in Sfat in the 1500s when there was a Chiddush to maybe start this over again. The Rambam has his famous Chiddush in the Sanhedrin. They write that if you get all the Rabbanim together in Eretz Yisrael, so they could restart the process. They should appoint the Rosh Yeshiva, and he becomes the Samuch, and then he gives it to everybody else. And sure, so in the days of the Beis Yosef, the Beis Yosef's Rebbe, Yaakov Bei Rav, tried to start this process over again. He gave smicha to a few of his Talmidim. The Rabbanim in Yerushalayim didn't like it. There was a big fight broke out, and it lasted for one, two generations, and the whole thing died down. So in the end of the day, we don't have smicha anymore. So Taisus asks, if we don't have smicha anymore, how can we have Geirus, this man is there? If you need Dayanim, and Dayanim mean by definition Smuchin, so how in the world can we ever have Geirus Bizman Hazeh? Taisus questions the very institution of Geirus Bizman Hazeh. So Taisus says, obviously we have Geirus Bizman Hazeh. The Amorim were Mekabel Geirim. The Gemara talks about in the days of the Amorim, we Mekabel Geirim in Bavel. They're Mekabel Geirim. We know everyone's, we've been Mekabel Geirim in all generations. So how could it be? What happened to the Smuchin? So Taisus gives you a few different solutions to the problem. So one day in Taisus is that you're right, you really should have required the Yom Smuchin. There's the Gzeres HaKosov. If you don't have it, it's not Ma'akiv. What's the Gzeres HaKosov? The Dor HaSeichem. This is a throwback to the first Shir. Remember we said that you're supposed to bring a Korban when you bring your Miskayer. Nobody brings a Korban Bizman Hazeh. Why don't we bring Karbanos Bizman? We don't have Beis HaMikdash. So how can you become Jewish without a Korban? So the Gemara says in Maseches Kriyos, it's enough to ask. There's a Pasuk that says, with Dor HaSeichem. The show must go on. It's a chiddush atar that you cannot have a generation without the possibility of having geirim l'dor haseichem. So the Rebbeinu Shlom wrote that word into the Torah l'dor haseichem, knowing the future, knowing full well that there's going to come a time without a Beis HaMikdash, and the Rebbeinu Shlom knew full well there's going to come a time without Dayanim Smuchin also, and he still said l'dor haseichem. Even though we're in Washington Heights and Tavshin Ayin Zayin, we have to have a couple of geirim. You cannot have an institution, you cannot have a generation when there's no geirim. So therefore, Taisus writes, just as the Gemara says that that Pasuk L'dor HaSeichem teaches us that we can forego the requirement for a Korban Bizman Hazeh, so too we can be Meichel on the requirement of Smuchim Bizman Hazeh. So you need Dayanim, you still need to be Dayanim, but they don't have to be Smuchim. That's one day in Taisus. Then Taisus quotes another one. Taisus writes that maybe the reason why we don't need Smuchim today is because we're invoking a principle called Shlichu Sahil. What in the world is Shlichu Sahil? The Gemara says in the Makam and the Gittin that there are many Dinei Torah that we do have Bizman Hazeh. Certain Dinei Torah we don't have, but certain Dinei Mamonos we do have today. How do we have any Dinei Torah today? So the Gemara says that we're acting as the Shlichim, we're the agents, we're the representatives of the Dayanim Smuchim of years gone by. So Shlichu Sahil Kav Dinei. So just as the Gemara says that Svara Lagabe Dinei Mamonos, we do that Lagabe Geirus as well. So many Mishonim had a lot of issues with that Taisus. The Ramban and Yevamos in the fourth prayer quotes that Taisus and says, that's the thing that Taisus is right. Because Shlichu Sahil was only a Dibnei D'Rabbanim. What kind of game is that? I'm the Shaliach of the Dayan. The Dayan's dead. The last Samuch died. Hillel HaSheni died 1500 years ago. And I'm his Shaliach. He never saw me. I never saw him. The Mishalech is no longer here. What kind of Shaliach is it? It's a Leitzanus. So the Ramban writes, the whole principle of Shlichu Sahil is only a Dibnei D'Rabbanim. It was a special takana that was made to Hefke Beis and Hefke to permit us to do. Otherwise, if you don't have any Dibnei Torah, the whole world's going to collapse. So they made a special din midrabanan to allow us to have certain dinei Torah bizman hazeh. But for geirus chadaraisa, says the Ramban. You're going to make a guy Jewish based on a takonos acham of hefke based on hefke. That doesn't make any sense. So the Ramban says that he can't believe that that's the answer. So the Ramban, it's the other answer to the Roseichem, etc. So you have a few different answers in Rishonim how to solve this dilemma about how do we have Kabbalah's Gerim Bizman Hazeh. Everyone agrees you do. There's not a shot. Nobody says we don't have Gerim today. Everyone agrees we have Gerim Bizman Hazeh. Everyone agrees the Geirus is Chalmin at Torah Bizman Hazeh. That's not a question. We've been Megayah people since the days of the Amorim. But the question is, how does it work mechanic-wise? So some of the Rishonim invoke with the Roseichem, other Rishonim invoke Shlichu Sahil. Other Rishonim write, the Rashba writes, it must be Chazal had a tradition that Geirus are Shloisha, the Gzeres HaKosov was Shloisha. Doesn't have to be Mishpat Mamish. Doesn't have to be Mamas Smuchim. Kach Nemra Lach Moshtinit. That was the din that you need three and you never ever needed Smuchim. Again, we don't know the answer. Everyone agrees. We know what we have to get through. We're not sure how we get to that point. So there is a famous word from the Rav that he said B'das HaRambam. Now, if you look at the Rambam, when he quotes the din of needing three dayanim, the Rambam doesn't even address the question. He doesn't say, well, he doesn't ask, V'yom toimer, we should need dayanim, smuchet, how do we do it? He just says you need three and call it a day. So what's pshat? So the Rav said that whereas Tosfos and Ramban and the Rashba, Al Rishonim thought it was a good kasha, and that each one has to bend over backwards to figure out what the answer to the kasha is, the Rambam could be held that it wasn't the kasha in the first place. Kusha Mekor Leisa. Why is Kusha Mekor Leisa? So the Rav had a famous biur. What's pshat in the din of smicha? What kind of halach is this, that certain din of Torah requires smicha? What's pshat? So one can understand the din of smuchin as a brisket Torah in one of two ways. Either one can understand that smuchin is a din of psak. I mean, certain piski halacha have to be backed up with a Moshe Kibbutz Torah Messina. It's got to be Ishri Pishon Moshe Rabbeinu. Not all. Let's say a person comes and asks me a Yalav Yovel Shaila, so I don't have to say, wait, I can't paskin until I have a smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu. A person comes to ask me how to sell his chometz, I don't have to be a samach Ishri Pish. Most Issa Vehepter doesn't require smicha. Certain shailas require smicha. The fashas require psak that has backed up by smicha. The knossos, kipshachaydish, certain types of piski halacha have to have a backed up by smuchin. But fundamentally, the din of smicha is a din of psak. Or maybe no, maybe the din of smicha is not a din of the psak. It's a din of the shame dayan, that the gavra, a sabuch, a different person, you have to have the degree, you have to have the title. So, ich bin a PhD, I'm an MA, I have my degree, I have my sabuch degree. You don't have it, you're a different type of person. You may know more than me. It's possible you know more. You have the title. You may get the job because you have the title. So there are certain jobs that the Torah says you require dayanim for. In order to sit on a din Torah, X, Y, and Z, you have to be a title of being a sabuch. So din of the dayan is not a din of the psach. My nafkamina. The Rav says, the big nafkamina. What if you have a type of a case that doesn't require a psach? It's not a shayla. It's not a give and take. There's no discussion. We require dayanim, not the Torah's peiske halacha. We require dayanim, the Torah's maisa beizdin. There's a din you require maisa beizdin, but there's no psach halacha that's being issued. There may be shaylas that come up. So the shaylas that come up, we'll call up a rabbi, we'll ask the peisek what to do. But the role of the beizdin is not to paskin the shaylas. The role of the beizdin is to be a maisa beizdin. The Rav said, if you hold that the din of smicha is only a din in psach, so then you have a type of bezin that doesn't require psach in the first place, so then there's no din of smicha altogether. So when it comes to the bezin of geirus, what hats are the bezin of geirus wearing? They're not paskin shas. Sometimes shas come up in hilchos geirus, but you don't have to go to 3 dayanim. You call Rav Moshe and Rav Moshe will tell you what to do. You don't need 3 dayanim to paskin the shas in geirus. You need 3 dayanim to be there, to be present as a maise bezin. So the Rav said, Moshe l'mal davidah mechalitza. You need 3 dayanim to be present by chalitza. So the Gemara says, the Pharisees, they don't have to be dayanim smuchim. Why not? So the Rav said, it's the same reason. The reason why they don't have to be smuchim. We have chalitza b'zman hazeh. Not because of shlichus sayim. We have chalitza because you never needed smuchim. Why don't you need smuchim by chalitza? Because there's no shalas by chalitza. Now, every once in a while, the shali comes up by chalitza. So we'll call the rabbi and ask him what to do. Look at Shulchan Aruch, figure out what to do. But the role of the dayanim and chalitza is not to paskin shalas. So if the role of a particular bezin is more b'teres ma'ase bezin than to paskin shaylas, there never was a need for smuchin in the first place. So when all the dust settles, you don't need dayanim smuchim. That's the bottom line. They don't have to be dayanim smuchim, but they have to be kosher le'edus, they have to be kosher le'dayanis. And we would like that somebody, at least one of them, knows what he's talking about. Otherwise, if we have a ratza and convert somebody, a lot of things are going to go wrong. So we want to make sure that some people, at least, who are sitting on the bezin gate, know a little bit what they're talking about. What exactly is this role of bezin? A bezin is not a poiske halacha de geirus. What exactly is the role of a bezin at a time of the geirus? So again, everyone agrees it's a din deraisa, but conceptually we can really understand it almost in one of two ways. Either way, we can understand that the role of the bezin is almost like the makablam nesager, that kabbalas geirus means that we have to makabal geirim, so it's almost like the Jewish communities really should be makablas geirim. Except what every time a person converts, all the Klai Yisrael is going to go off to greet the person. So we as the Bezin represents the Tzarech HaTzibur, the Bezin is speaking on behalf of the community, and we go forward and we're almost Mekabal Ger. We actively are Mekabal Ger. That's the role of the Bezin. What do I say? No. Mushy drushes, sermons, Kabbalah says, yeah. The Kachanim Ralach, the Torah said, Bezin has to be there. It's a Maisa Bezin. It's got to be done in front of it. The Chalitza. By Chalitza, we're Mekabal as a Chalitza. What are we doing? We have to passively sit there and watch. The chalitza has to take place. The ein has a kingdom. That's it. There's no role of the bezin actively being makabel. So what would the din be if you have a bezin that's sitting on a case and they don't even know that they're sitting on a case? They're not even aware that they're serving as a bezin for geirus. What would the halacha be? You have three people who are washing a geirus and they're clueless. They don't even realize they're washing a geirus. Would that be good or not? So the Nebu, there's a shayla about that. He says, what would that halacha be? So the shayla that the Nebu raises, a fascinating shayla. We spoke a little bit about it in the past, and we're going to hopefully talk about it a little more in the coming shiurim. We spoke about the Gemara in Yevamos about Muberish and his Gaira. If you have a woman who's pregnant and converts, the Gemara says that the tefillah works for the baby also. There's no need to be tevil the baby afterwards. So the Rebbe Yehuda has a shaila in the Sefer Dogel Mevava. Those were his notes on the side of Yerodea. So the Rebbe Yehuda did not publish those notes. He published his Shas Tshuvas of Rebbe Yehuda, and he published his Sefer Tzlach on a certain Masechet in Shas. The notes of Dogel Mevava were his own private notes on the side of his Shulchan Aruch after he died. So they opened up his farm and they saw he had all his Ha'aris and the side of Shulchan Aruch. So they published it and they printed it in the Shulchan Aruch. So every once in a while, there are discrepancies between what it says in the notes and what it says in the Tshuva. So the poskim right, you have to follow what it says in the Tshuva, because this wasn't for public. It wasn't a Pesach. These are Ha'aris. He was thinking. So one night he was sitting in, you know, Rebbe Yehuda sitting and writing in the middle of the night. It's also kedai to read. I always think about the Rebbe Yehuda writing tshuvas this time of year. I remember when I was a little boy, so there was a anyone here used to read Olamenu? Oh, Olamenu, before your time. Olamenu used to put up a Torah Masorah, this little like a cartoon, little magazine for kids. And so there was I remember when I was 8, 9 years old, there was a cartoon story in the back about the Rebbe Yehuda and Erev Pesach. So what happened in Erev Pesach in Prague? So the story was that Rebbe Yehuda was late at night. He had finally finished Bidikas Chometz, and he finished all the Mechiras Chometz, and he finished kashering his kitchen. He's all ready. It's 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and he decides, oh, he's going to sit down and he's going to learn a little bit, a few minutes. He hasn't learned in 2 weeks. So he sits down and he learns, and as he walks into his little study to learn, he sees that there's a bottle of blood there. He says, bottle of blood? What's a bottle of blood doing here? He chaps, it must be a blood libel that the goyim are trying to stick a bottle of blood into the rabbi's farm. They're going to come the next morning, they're going to accuse him of killing the goyim. So he realizes it right away, so he disposes the bottle of blood. And then the goyim come, they can't find that. What was the punchline of the story? And it was an exciting story for kids. The punchline was that even Erev Pesach, after Bikas Chametz, he better have went back to learn. If he wouldn't have gone back to learn, he wouldn't have found the bottle of blood. So I always think about that story. It was over 40 years ago I read that story. I always think about it, because now any rabbi knows that these are not the most productive learning days. So you're busy, mechiras chametz, you're answering shaylos, you're cashing your own kitchen, you're helping your wife out, you're trying to keep the kids out of trouble, they're not in school anymore. So and of course, why you have shiurim until Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock? So many different things are going on. So it's very, very hard to learn. I haven't opened up a safe in a week and a half. So every time when I sit down for 30 seconds, Baruch Hashem, no blood levels, I sit down for 30 seconds, I think that I would have been proud to see them. By the time I open the safe, I fall asleep. I'm not sure, I don't know where I'm up to. It's been a hard day. But Baruch Hashem, eventually Pesach will come and get back to learn a little bit. Anyway, what are we talking about? Oh yeah, Rebbe Yehuda. So in, maybe he was writing this Ha'ari. You never know what he was writing that night of Lev Tikas Chanuk. So in his personal notes in the Sar Shulchan Aruch, he has the following Shaila. He writes, what would the din be if you have Muberish in his Gaira and the Bezin doesn't know she's pregnant? Maybe she didn't tell them. Maybe she didn't even know she was pregnant. Now, Igloy Milsa, now 7 months later, she gives birth to a baby. So they do the math. They realize, oh, she was not pregnant at the time when we were Megayer. Would you say, Ein Tzorach Tevila? Would you say that the baby doesn't have to be Nisgayer? So there was a Beis Din present, but the Beis Din didn't have a clue what they were doing. They know they were Megayer hard. They didn't know they were Megayer the baby. So would that be good enough or not? That's what the Rebbe Yehuda Shaila he raises. And he says, Ein L'Harach Kan, he doesn't have any room time to write about it. Must have been there at Pesach. He doesn't have any time. He says, the Tali Ba'ashti Ravavi. It's Tali on a big machlekes in Rishaynim, and he leaves Tzarchi and he leaves it hanging. What does it mean? What's the Sisrei Torah of this Rebbe Yehuda? So I think what the Rebbe Yehuda meant was he had a double suffix. So first of all, he wasn't sure about this Nakuda. When Bezin is Makabal Gerim, are they formally actively Makabal Gerim? If they are the Makabalness again, so they have to be aware of what they're doing. Or if you say no, that they're not the Makabal Gerim, as long as they're there, they're present, it doesn't matter whether they're with their Bezin or not. And the second issue that maybe the Rebbe Yehuda wasn't sure about is the case of Muberish and his Gaira. Are they really being Megayer the Uber? So remember we said it depends on the 2 days in the Gemara. If you're the Uber Yerachimo, there's only one Geirus taking place. The Geirus is on the mother. The Uber is part of the mother. So let's say, for example, let's say the mother has 3 kidneys and they didn't know about it. They thought she only had 2 kidneys. She has an extra kidney inside. I don't think that's possible, but she has a 3rd kidney inside. So you would say, oh, the 3rd kidney is not Jewish because the Beis Din didn't know about it. They knew the Be'er Megayer Rachel. So Rachel is made up of 3 kidneys. She has three lungs, 2 hearts, whatever she's got inside her. So that's all part of Rachel's biological makeup. So if she has an Uber inside her, whether the Beis Din knows, does know, whether she knows, she doesn't know, it doesn't matter. Whatever's part of her body, it becomes Jewish. But so you don't need Yedias Beis Din, because we have Yedias Beis Din. Yedias Beis Din is on the woman who's converting. But if you hold that, it's a separate Geirus. If you hold Uber Lavi Yerchimo, like half the Amorim, half the Rishonim hold Uber Lavi Yerchimo, it's a separate Geirus. it's a whole different ballgame. It's a separate gerus. There's two different gerusim going on. One the Beis Din is aware of, one the Beis Din is not aware of. So the Rebbe is not sure. If you have a gerus that Beis Din is not cognizant of, they're not aware of what they're doing, maybe that's not called the Maaseh, a Beis Din for gerus. So at the end of the day, the Rebbe light by tzach, he doesn't know what the din is. But it's a very lumdish shaila. So you can have a real nafkaminus. This is a real shaila. We didn't talk yet about which part of the gerus requires Beis Din, but this is a throwback to what we spoke about the first week. Remember, we spoke about situations where you have a baby that's born, and we think that the baby is Jewish. Everyone thought the baby was Jewish, but the male in the back of his mind has reason to believe that this baby maybe is not Jewish. There's a question, it's not sure what the status of the mother is. So for whatever reason, whether the male is justified or unjustified, he goes ahead and he does a milah on this baby on the eighth day, and he has in the back of his mind l'shem gerus. Now 20 years later, when the child is the Sora, does this kid need a nuat avasam bris? So one of the tzadim l'hachah will say, well, the gerus, it was done l'shem gerus anyway. Was it done with the Beis Din? Who knew about this? The Moel knew about this. Anybody else knew about it? The gerus requires three, not like the Mordechai. You need 3 days on him. So does the Moel have to, if the Moel has any suspicion, must the Moel tell two other people about this? Have to make sure that two other guys also aware of the fact that this may be Beis Din the gerus? Or maybe no. The Moel is doing it l'shem gerus. There are 20 people around. They're watching a meal l'shem gerus. They don't even have a clue to watch a meal l'shem gerus. It doesn't matter. The Yehuda said as a possibility, maybe the Beis Din doesn't have to be mekablos agerim. So again, it's an open shaila, this question. The Yehuda blight by tzachi is not sure. So a couple of them, there's definitely a din of gerus before Beis Din, and Beis Din definitely requires three. And so we paskin, it has to be kosher dayonim, and it doesn't have to be smuchin, and whether or not the mekabel or not is not clear. But there's one gemara that is mamish, like a curveball in this entire sugya, a very famous gemara. But the gemara says that Maseches Yevamos tells a story about, we spoke about this gemara earlier on this year. There's a there was a story about a woman who had converted shalai kedim. The original gerus was done not properly. It's not clear exactly what went wrong, but something was done not properly. Then she got married to a Jewish fellow, and she was living observant, Torah observant. And years later, so it came up that the original gerus was a shaky. So when the question was brought to the Amorim, so Rav Asi says, Milo tavlu l'midusa. And for the last 10 years, she's been going to the mikveh every month. We all know she goes to the mikveh every month. So what's the problem? So even if the original gerus was no, if she's gone to the mikveh subsequently, there's no milah for a woman, so all there is tefillah. So the tefillah was good. Midyav, she's still Jewish. The kids are Jewish. Everyone's Jewish. Everyone's happy. Milo tavlo l'dusa. Four words. Milo tavlo l'dusa. So all the Yishayim and Baba the Kasha, what do you mean milo tavlo l'dusa? Where's the Beis Din? The Gemara says, the Mishnah is guy b'nol b'nas, but ain't no ger. Minat Torah, it's not gerus b'chlal. So where's the, what happened to the Beis Din? So the Mordechai solves that problem. So the Mordechai writes, I'll tell you where the Beis Din is. You don't need a Beis Din of three, or you need a Beis Din of one. And one is good because the Mordechai says, we paskin chadami kosher, and toys is kasher. The answer to the kasher is that it's tacha inochinami, tacha don't need shlosha, meager din. So one dayan is good enough. So the Mordechai quotes some Mishnah and gave that answer. So then he jumps and he says, what do you mean? Where's the one? Who's what? The one who's going to the mikveh every day? Who's sitting in the mikveh watching? The mikveh lady is watching. The mikveh lady is not kosher. Everybody knows a woman's supposed to be a dayan. What does that one day in the Mordechai say? No, like that one day in Taisus. He says, no, women are kosher to be dayan. It's okay. So according to that one day in the Mordechai, one woman, she's one, she's a woman, she's two strikes against her, and that's the gerus. That's what the Gemara meant when it says, Bilo Tavla Yedusa. So we don't pass like either one of those chidushim. It's chidushay Torah. You want to run a religion based on a one possible answer in Mordechai that nobody else holds like, that's not how we run Torah. So but there's one day in Rishayim that says, so what are the more conventional answers to that kasha? Milo tavla nidusa. So Tosfos in Maseches Yevamos quotes a very interesting answer to this kasha. They don't tell you who it's from. They say Yesh Befarshim. So some Yesh Betarshim, there's some who had the following answer, that when the woman goes to the mikveh every month, you have a Beis Din. Who's the Beis Din? We're the Beis Din. No one's washing her in the water. We know she's going to the mikveh. She's an observant woman. We know she's a young woman. She's obviously still going to Aras HaMishpacha. So we know that every month this woman is going to the mikveh. Nobody saw her in the water. The only person who saw was the mikveh lady. She doesn't count. She's one. She's a woman. It doesn't matter. We have what's called an halacha edus yedia b'lora'iya. As long as we know that something is happening, even though we didn't mamash see it with our own two eyes, that's good enough. That's also considered to be a yedia. That's a ra'iya. That's ki'ilu she was tavelus in front of Beis Din. That's quite a chiddush. So Rav Moshe made that Tosfos famous, not in Hilchos Geiros, he made the Tosfos famous in Hilchos Kashrus. Rav Moshe quoted that Tosfos in the sugya of Chol of Yisrael. The Mishnah says in Maseches Avodah Zarah that if you have a goy owns a cow and he milks the cow, so you're not allowed to drink that milk. You have to have what's called Yisrael Ro'ehu. You have to have a Jew who's watching the milking process. Why? Because we're afraid that the goy may have mixed in a little bit of treif for milk. It's only chashash min derabanan, because it's so unlikely, and even if he did, it's probably bottle bit of anyway. It's so unlikely that there's a real problem in the Torah here. So it's only a chumim min derabanan, but the kach tikdu chachot. So there was at some point between the days of Moshe Rabbeinu and the days of Yehuda Nasi, some days they made it a kind of called Chol Yisrael. You have to have Yisrael Ro'ehu. So Rabbi Yisrael writes in the Tshuva, what if you have a situation where nobody sees the milk coming out of the cow? There's no Jew watching it, but the Jew knows that it's coming out of the cow. Everybody knows it. Without seeing it, I know. I know certain things without seeing. How do I know? Because in America, nobody milks pigs anymore. Nobody milks camels anymore. Because if you ever try to milk a pig or a camel and try to sell it in your dairy industry, you get thrown out. You get a fine, you get a knas, they close down your whole thing. You'd be on the news, you'd be on the newspaper, you'd be on all the blogs. It's never going to happen, says Rav Moshe. So we know that since you're only allowed to milk certain animals, it's illegal to milk other animals in America, to sell it off as cow's milk. So we know with 100% certainty this is cow's milk. So Rav Moshe said, this is the Mishnah. It's Yisrael Ro'ehu. It's not really Ro'ehu, it's Yodehu. So Rav Moshe says, he quotes the Taisnei Bavis, he says, Madach Bageiris Deraisa, Taisnei quotes Yesh Befarshim, that the Beis Din Haroan is not necessary, or the Beis Din Yodin is sufficient. So for Geiris Deraisa, it's good enough. For Chol Yisrael, which is only Derabonim, not good enough, it's good enough. So Rav Moshe says, well, milk in America, or any other normal standard country, where you have that supervision, so it's Yediyah Sayisrael. Yediyah Sayisrael is like Yediyah Sayisrael. So Rav Moshe holds that all milk in America is called Yisrael. A lot of people say, I'm not Machbid or Chavitzel. That's particularly Machbid. I'm not Machbid and Kashrus. It's a Mishnah. The din is, everyone has to drink Chav Yisrael. Rav Moshe's Chiddush is that he redefined what Chav Yisrael means. Chav Yisrael doesn't mean there's a Jew with a long white beard watching the milk. It means it's Uncle Sam watching the milk. We're all watching the milk. Yisrael, I'm Jewish. I'm watching the milking. I am 1,000 miles away from the cow. It doesn't matter. I have Yedias Yisrael. That's the same as Re'ias Yisrael. That was Ramosha's Raya. So others disagreed with Ramosha. Others said that Re'ia means Mamash Re'ia. I don't care what you know. You have to Mamash have somebody see it. But according to Ramosha's understanding, all the milk was technically Yedias Yisrael. Remember a few years ago, there was the U.S. Department of Agriculture was on strike or something. So, a couple of days or something, nothing was being monitored. So some people were more shiloh, whether you can drink milk anymore. And maybe there's no inspectors coming. They're all on strike for 2 weeks. So no one's inspecting. Maybe all of a sudden the Goyim, they've been waiting up all these years to start milking the chazas and to start putting the milk into the system. I think we usually assume that wasn't the first thing on their minds to go fill up with all the camel's milk in those couple of days. Anyway, who knew? Okay, anyway, so again, so these are some of the answers that are given to the Kasha. What happened to the Beis Din? So we'll have to see that there are some, the two answers that we just gave, the Mordechai's answer and the Taisa's answer, are the Mechudosh's answers. There are several other answers that are probably more conventional answers, which are going to impact significantly on the Mechudosh's game. It's going to be after Yantif, so we'll continue from this point. So someone remember what we're up to, we're right smack in the middle of this Kasha. What do you do with Milotom Medusa in light of the fact that you're